You are listening to Spirituality and Stuff, a show to discuss everything spiritual and having to do with spiritual and social justice liberation. I'm Summer Zachary. I'm your host. And you can hear me every Sunday from 8 to 9 p.m. live. You can also stream us online, wpvmfm.org. And you can always check out my tarot healing services or archives of the radio show on my website at www.nourishedrootshealing.com. So tonight I have a very special guest, Virginia Rosenberg. She's a local Asheville area astrologer. You want to say hi?
Hi.
Hey, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, like your experience with learning about astrology, that kind of thing?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Virginia Rosenberg, and my official tagline that I've created for myself is intuitive astrologer and sacred movement artist. My life and my offerings are a path of blending movement arts and ritual with my knowledge of astrology, and all those things come together into a healing practice that I offer in this area as well as internationally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your work with movement?
Yeah, sure. We can start there. Well, I have been going to yoga classes since I was a child. My mom used to take me to a weekly yoga class when I was very young. And I grew up classically trained as a dancer in many different styles and forms. So my young life was a lot of movement and specifically training inside of movement. So not just free movement, but learning different techniques and styles and creating a deep relationship with my body that way. And I returned to yoga in 2008 when I was living in Boston, Massachusetts. And coming from a rural lifestyle prior to that, being in the city was very stressful for me, even though I loved it. But I just didn't feel like I was inside my body, so I got back into yoga there. And then I moved to Asheville, and it was Yoga Paradise, USA. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so I returned to yoga and delved really deeply into it and many different styles in Asheville since there's such a wealth of amazing teachers here. And I've never stopped dancing either.
Yeah, don't stop dancing.
Yeah, never stopped dancing. And I also became a martial artist of sorts. After moving here, I met someone who is a really accomplished martial arts teacher. He calls them Taoist inner alchemy arts, and I've been training with him ever since regularly for the past 5 years.
Awesome. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the Koya retreats that you do?
Yeah, sure. So Koya is a movement practice, and it's also just a movement, a social movement, a spiritual movement. But Koya is a Quechuan word that means queen, and it's about embodying the divine feminine. So someone who is considered a Koya in ancient times is someone who is totally devoted to living a life of reverence. And Koya is a movement practice that incorporates yoga with dance, with shamanic ritual, with free movement. And I stumbled upon Koya a couple years ago through serendipity. It's a long story. But when I found myself in Costa Rica at a Koya retreat.
Isn't it always serendipitous? It's weird.
Yeah. Especially the big ones. Yeah. The big things that happen in our lives are like, you know, we couldn't have predicted it. We couldn't have planned
wild,
events.
Yeah, wilder than fiction.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah, so I found myself in Costa Rica on this retreat doing Koya for the first time. And it was a revolution for me and a revelation for me because all of my movement training has been exactly that, movement training. And Koya is developed around the concept that you already know how to move your body, and you don't need to train it or learn how. It's more about tapping in and feeling your inner rhythm, feeling your inner pulse, and allowing yourself to trust the guidance of your body.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that it was such a powerful counterpart to my martial arts and my dance training, which I've gained so much discipline and knowledge of function through those arts, and I've gotten deeper into my own art form through that. But tapping into the freedom of just allowing my conditioned body to go wherever it wanted to go was the perfect blend. It was the perfect balance.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of truth to what you're talking about, because as someone who has had a lot of physical muscular problems, I think that a lot of people don't really understand how to tell me or guide me to moving therapeutically, because maybe what they tell me is totally counterintuitive or it hurts or whatever. So I've learned to just sort of like move around in ways that feel good for me, and that's the most energy releasing cleansing for me. So I think that there's something definitely to letting the body inform its own movement.
And I feel like that's such a healing thing, just to create a more trusting relationship with your body, especially coming from a background of physical illness, like recreating, rebuilding that trust with your body seems like an essential part to getting it back on its feet.
Totally. Yeah, trust is a very important thing. Okay, so that's an awesome topic that I would love to delve more into with you at one point. But let's talk about intuitive astrology. So what is an intuitive astrologer? You are an intuitive astrologer. What's the difference between that and standard astrology?
Yeah, thank you. Yes, so I call myself an intuitive astrologer because as I started to meet other astrologers, I realized that, so astrology is a language, and it's also a science, and it's also an art form. Astrology is all these different things. It's also a healing technique.
Right.
But because it's a language, and there's so much more to astrology than a lot of people assume, because what a lot of people know about is horoscopes in the paper, which is very much like fast food astrology.
It's, exactly.
It's like quick hit, not...
It's like that 10-minute tarot reading or something like that that you get on a psychic line.
Yeah, exactly. Or even there's websites out there where you can like pull tarot cards just online, you know, which that has its place for sure. Just as the horoscopes in the paper have their place. It's wonderful for exposure and access, but just wanted to voice and put out there that astrology is so much more deep than that, much more complex. And it literally is, if you've ever learned another language, you know that you can just go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into it.
Yeah, it's its own rabbit hole. I've been studying a little bit of Vedic astrology, and I just feel so validated by it. I see really like a mirror to my life when I look at my chart, because so much is there that I can't really explain, and it's so supportive to me in ways that I don't think I've felt supported, and it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll definitely talk about the healing benefits of astrology, but yes, to preface that conversation with this understanding that astrology is, it's pretty technical, it's pretty hardcore. I mean, you really have to study, you really have to get into it. And I bring that up because I noticed that most of my astrologer friends are really highly intellectual people. You have to be. You have to have a strong mind in order to assimilate and incorporate that much information into your awareness.
Yeah.
So I found that when I gathered with other astrologers, the intellectual climate would be very noticeable. And I'm an intellectual person as well, but one of the things about my experience in this life is my life is really a journey of learning how to blend and cooperate my intellectual mind, my left brain, with my intuitive mind, my creative mind, my right brain. So I call myself an intuitive astrologer because developing intuition and going into a place of no thought And inner silence, inner calm is equally as important to me in my sessions and as a concept as part of a healing process, and a total whole integrated healing process. That's equally as important as just logically ordering information and passing on concise and consistent and relatable messages that people can understand.
Right.
Yes. So I've always been an intuitive person, and when I started to get deep into my astrology practice, that realm was opening to me more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And because the main reason why I practice and study astrology is because it's a healing art.
Yes.
And a healing tool, I emphasize the intuitive part because I feel that you can't really access real healing or complete healing just through the linear mind or just through the logical mind.
Right.
For me, healing always sneaks in through some back door.
Yeah, yeah, that's so true. And I mean, if you think of your most talented and gifted, like Chinese doctors or Ayurvedic doctors, they're not going purely on like signs and symbols.
Yeah.
They're going based on their intuition. I mean, taking pulse is very intuitive. I really like the way that a lot of holistic healing combines many different esoteric parts and puts them together, because I feel like we compartmentalize things so much in society. So,
yeah, I totally agree.
So intuitive astrology would be more like spending time with the person that you're reading for one-on-one before even looking at their chart. Would that be something?
Yeah, that's a great question. So people don't know what to expect when they come for sessions with me, and I often don't know what to expect either, because I just allow the session to take place, and I create a specific container and then allow whatever is needed to come through in the session. So I like to say to some of my clients that I always take their birth information. I always cast the chart for them, which is just a matter of collecting your birth date, time, and location and putting it into
simple.
A program. Yeah, and the program will reach out into the world of technology and synthesize that information and basically create a picture of where all of the planets in our solar system and other heavenly bodies were at the moment that you were born.
Mm-hmm.
So I cast a chart, but I don't look at the chart. I specifically don't look at the chart in the beginning of session. The first thing that I like to do after I open space is I ask my client to set an intention, and that is what sort of creates the theme, and that's where things start to unfold. I'm able to feel a lot, whether it's physical sensations or emotional sensations or just subtle things that I'm picking up on. And I trust that, and I communicate what I'm feeling, and we just go from there. So sometimes we'll spend the whole session doing what may look from the outside as just a conversation. But on the inside, there's so much more than that going on.
It's like archetypes interacting at the holographic level or something like that. That's I don't really know how else to describe it, but that's how I can describe a tarot reading.
yes, I love that description. Yeah, and so I won't start the session by looking at your chart, but I'll wait. I like, my job basically is to do really, really deep listening. Deep listening to the client, deep listening to the etheric field, deep listening to myself, my body, my own, the messages that are coming through. And I wait for the cue, pretty much, to go and look at the chart for more details or more specificity or for timing or for clues. So sometimes I'll look at a chart and bam, like something really pops out at me, and we're able to really get in there to the root of the issue that we were trying to explore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of what happens in a reading or an energy healing session for the healer is really difficult to describe and to put into words. I interviewed Rachel Frezza. She is an intuitive medical healer. Yeah. And we talked a lot about what healing actually feels like when she's in a session, and then maybe what her clients feel. And then I also interviewed Daisy Marquis. I don't know if you've ever met Daisy.
Yeah, she's one of my teachers.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she also talks about energy healing and flower essences and what actually happens and transpires within the healing session. So I'm just putting that out there for listeners who are kind of, you know, maybe listening to you and wondering, well, what does it feel exactly right. like? You know, is it hot or is it cold? You know, so.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, there's so many different sensations and different things that come through. But what I look for in my sessions and what ultimately happens in sessions always is synthesis. Mm. So we often start out with maybe a client bringing 3 questions, 5 questions, 6 questions to the session, and we'll cover those questions or we'll explore those different areas, and then we'll see the way that all of those areas or all of those questions are really a part of the same thread. And we let that all circle around and synthesize. So by the end of a session, most of my clients, what I've heard from my clients, they report feeling lit up, radiant, seen, validated, peaceful, calm, like they can rest inside of trust and affirmation that they are who they are and they're on the right path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, I feel like that happens with me when I read tarot for people. I mean, you get little clues and then you just like go further and further and further back into the root, and then all of a sudden you have like one archetype, one situation, one emotional prototype that you can like link to all the other problems and issues in a person's life. I don't know how to either explain that.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah. So would you like to tell me a little bit about my chart?
Ooh, sure.
I'm very curious.
Yeah, and also something just came to mind for me to mention before we do that, which is I'm so grateful for the energies that I work with in session, because I don't feel that yes, people are coming to me for advice or with questions, and they're looking for answers, and I transmit messages, but I am not giving people answers. I am like, I'm not big enough for that necessarily, but there are these energies that I'm connected with that all of us are connected with, you know, the earth, the sky, just really, really fundamental foundational elements that if you can listen deeply enough to that, then the answer is always there. It's always waiting. It's inside of that healing place, that meditative place that we go into. So when I sit in session with clients one-on-one, I feel like we're both creating a healing container. We're both getting healed because we're both playing. Yeah. We're both playing in that pure vibration. And the messages that come through are for both of us and for anyone else who might happen to hear the session on recording or whatever. So for some reason, I just wanted to bring that through, that I'm really grateful that I don't have to be responsible about creating the medicine. Like, medicine exists, and it's just a matter of when that synthesis happens in a session and you come to that still point, it's like, bam, there's the answer.
Yeah, definitely. And I love feeling like a channel for sacred energy to go through. And then knowing that it's not me, you know, that's, I'm not giving my own blood, sweat, and tears to people. And it's not my energy that I'm, my healing energy that I'm giving them, it's spirits.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also wanted to say, this is not the first time that, Virginia looked at my chart. I, had the pleasure of sitting with her, before and having her look at my chart, and I just want to say that it was awesomely validating and very sweet, and had me thinking a lot about my own life and my own trajectory and doing a lot of reflection. And that's actually a very good compliment to you, I think, because I've seen many astrologers, and some of them I connect with very deeply, and then some of them I don't necessarily, So it's not like you're the first astrologer I've seen and you're great and da da da. I mean, I've sat with a lot of astrologers and worked with my own chart. So good job.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm really glad that you felt a resonance.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is my chart, and I guess we can talk a little bit about life path.
Yeah.
What the difference between looking at someone's chart to determine their life path and then what prediction is, that kind of thing.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you brought that up, because one thing that I would like to put out there is I'm not interested in doing predictive work.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do predictive work, because something I like to say about a reading is only good in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about full presence and accessing the utmost healing potential and the order, the divine order, if you will, that's present in the moment. Mm-hmm. And during session.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of repeat clients. Some clients I see like every couple weeks. Some mm-hmm. clients I see once a month or whatever it is, because a reading is something that we both go through together, and mm-hmm. it's just like anything else in life. It's not the end all be all. And I've heard a lot of people have come to me with some fear and some trepidation about readings, because they've gotten readings from people who told them who knows what, you know, that they were yes. going to die at age 30, and now they're 33, and they lived their life a certain way because they always had that concept in their mind.
It's so awful. I went to an astrologer who told me that I was going to have really horrible luck in love, and that I wasn't going to find the love of my life and all this stuff. Mm. And I really took that in, because when you sit with someone, you're really creating sacred space, and you have to be like very clear about your intentions and what you're saying, and what you say, you can't say it with ulterior motives. And
mm-hmm.
so, I have heard those stories from people who get tarot cards or tarot card readings from me, and it's just so sad. It's like, no, you're never not going to have a kid.
Yeah.
No, the death card does not mean that someone is going to die, but someone told them that.
Right. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really shy away from predictive work. I'm not interested in predictive work because of that, because I understand the power of word. I understand the power of thought, and I have no interest in putting out words or putting out thoughts that are going to inspire more fear, more mm-hmm. reticence, a lack of ability to feel fully alive in this world. That's what my mission is, I mm-hmm. guess, in my work, is I want to see a world more radiant, see mm-hmm. a world more lit up. So
mm-hmm.
I won't just, my readings aren't all hunky-dory. I'm not just like, oh, everything's perfect and beautiful. We do address the real issues, but I would never want to walk someone into a trap of limiting their own concept of themselves or limiting their concept of life. So, mm-hmm. and even like people ask me what the gender of their child is going to be when they're born, or,
mm-hmm.
You know, when will I meet my partner and things like that. And I'd just like to say some things are better left to the mystery. And sometimes I honestly will get solid information about that stuff that I feel I can trust. But I'm so aware of not influencing people in a way that they're seeking information or validation from outside themselves,
mm-hmm.
that I just won't answer those questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of times those questions and those fears go back to a root cause.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people won't understand that or don't really want to sit with it. They want to know the answers. But, you know, if someone comes and tells you, when am I going to get married? When am I going to get married? And is very, like, insistent on it. It's
mm-hmm.
like, okay, well, you're showing me that this is a very important thing in your life.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you rushing it? Are you really staying true to your heart, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, life path. To say that I don't do predictive work, what I do as a reader is reflect to people with additional energy and additional insight, additional information, what they already know.
Mm-hmm.
I look for the resonance of truth in the things that they're asking me or telling me, and I reflect that back to them. And the gift of astrology is that it creates this symbolic map that we can look at that really speaks to the life path and the life process that people are in at any given moment. And having more information about that is similar to, I think, you know, walking through a strange land and suddenly there's a sign that's pointing you in a certain direction. Or maybe the sign just says, you're on the right path, exclamation point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Omens, that could be a whole other that could be a whole other show.
Yeah, I would listen to that show.
Okay, so how does an astrology chart work? Mm-hmm. Can you explain that to us?
Yes, great. So I already mentioned about how to cast a chart. Basically, these days you just put the info into a computer and the chart is cast. But you can also do it by hand by looking at something called an ephemeris, which is a tome of a book, and there's tons of them throughout time because it's tracking where the heavenly bodies are at any given moment. Mm. It's all right there printed up. So that's the old school way, is looking back at the astrological coordinates and then hand drawing the chart. And what I'm looking at when I look at a chart is a circular picture of the sky. There is a horizon line, which is also known as the rising or the ascendant. And the rising / horizon line denotes the astrological sign of the zodiac that was aligned with the horizon of the earth at the moment that you were born.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the zodiac? The zodiac is basically, the Earth is floating through space, and from our perspective on Earth, there are these different characters that are presiding over different areas of the sky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because, you know, the number 12 repeats throughout history as a sacred number, and, you know, Jesus had 12 disciples, you know, there's 12 signs, and the patterning of the archetypes within astrology can be seen in so many other kinds of things, like, you know, within tarot, within other religions, spiritual traditions. It's fantastic.
Yes, I love that. Yeah, when people have questions about astrology, I think a lot about what life was like before we had electricity.
Right.
What life was like before we had any artificial form of light. Other than fire. Fire is not artificial, you know.
Right.
Fire is one of the things that's of the earth. And not to say that electricity is artificial either, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about what life is like on earth without any interference between the earth and sky. So our ancestors were so connected to the movement patterns of the heavenly bodies, of these luminaries.
Right.
The sun and the moon and so much more. And so that's what astrology points to, is the importance of that relationship and how our ancestors functioned in part was by assigning meaning to these different bodies, these different planets, these different luminaries, and to these different sections of the sky. And that is what gave birth to the archetypes of the zodiac, is maybe the way that people felt or how they experienced life was they noticed it was a certain way when the sun was in Leo,
right?
For example. And we look around here in North Carolina and the sun is in Leo, you go to the farmer's market and everything there is a hot pepper,
right,
a tomato or something that's just, it's spicy, it's alive, it's vital,
it's hot, it's you know. Yeah, Leo's like, look at me.
Yes, it's like that full essence of summer, but it's also, it burns. It really burns. And then Virgo, the following sign, is harvest time. And that's personally my favorite time of year for food, when the squash start. You still have that summer produce, but then the fall produce is coming in and you get squash and you get greens and you still have some tomatoes, and it's just this perfect combination, and it's time to reap all of that,
right,
and start to organize it, start to set it up and put it away and plan for
and that's
being
why,
able to survive winter.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, the Wiccan wheel comes in, you know, with the celebration of the peak of each of the seasons, you know, and mm-hmm. it's tied in astrologically, and then it's tied into exactly what the earth is doing. So it's the it's the earth's heartbeat, basically. I mean, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah, so you can see the simplicity of archetypal rendering in a sense. There's an intellectual quality about it, but that's really intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
That's really so similar to, you know, having a conversation with a friend and going home and thinking like, with that friend, I feel like this versus with this other friend, I feel like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different theme. It's a different relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just all to give a little bit of context around the creation of the zodiac characters.
Right.
Yeah. So when I'm looking at a chart, I'm looking at a wheel of zodiac characters, zodiac personalities, archetypes. And there's that rising sign, which was the one on the horizon at the moment of your birth. And then it just goes on from there. So it's a circular chart, and it's divided into four sections, four quadrants. And then there are sections within sections, so that there is a total of 12 houses, 12 sections in a chart. So going back
12
to that
pieces of the pie.
Yes, 12 pieces of the pie, exactly. And then there's all these little symbolic representations of planets, lunar nodes, and more theoretical points that aren't physical, but they're calculated because there's some theoretical points that are calculated for deeper meaning that you can reach into in a chart. And I also use asteroids, particular asteroids as well, in the charts that I cast. So that's what I'm looking at right now when I look at your chart.
Okay, cool. So all the planets and the signs move through the houses.
Yes.
Yes, just to make sure. Just to clarify, because
yeah,
I mean, I like explaining it that way because it's always helpful for me to see, like, okay, that the houses are stable, right? And then the signs go through them, or is it the other way around?
Well, if you're
not at all,
if you're talking about a birth chart, then the houses and the signs, the zodiac signs, are always stable.
Okay,
I mean, everything is stable in a birth chart, you know, the planets don't move in a birth chart either, because it's the birth chart is a snapshot.
Right.
But if you're talking about like transits, which is where the planets are now, then you would format where the planets are against the basic birth chart.
I think what I was talking about is like more abstract, just like imagining that looking up at any blank sky, there's that circle with 12 pieces in it that represents you know, maybe 12, the 12 houses. And then for everybody's chart, it's a little bit different.
Yes.
So that's what I mean by like moving, I guess, like through, cause the Mercury will never be in the same place for, you know, it could be in your same place and with somebody else, but it's rarely is, you know, so it's gonna, so that's what I mean by moving.
Yeah. And one of the biggest differentials in charts from person to person, like, say two people are born the same day. But even if they're born the same day, if they're born an hour and a half apart, mm-hmm. they're going to have different house placements. Everything else is going to be relatively the same.
Yep.
Yeah. And the houses make a big impact.
Okay, so when you're looking at somebody's chart, how do you kind of, what do you do? Take us through, like, you know, your process.
Sure, thank you. That's great. Well, I like to start at the door, the front door of the chart, and I consider the rising or the ascendant to be the front door of the chart. So that's where I'd begin. And for you, is it okay if I share some information about your chart? So your rising is Pisces.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I start there is because the rising sign or the ascendant is considered to be like the mask that we wear
mm-hmm.
as we engage with the world and the world engages with us. So for you, I would say like you wear the mask of the mystic.
Mm-hmm.
You wear the mask of the spiritualist, the meditator, the person who does things behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
the dreamer,
mm-hmm.
Maybe even the artist, the poet, the mm-hmm. musician. Yeah, those would all be characteristics that are involved.
Definitely.
Yeah. And then I move on from there, and I use rulership. I'm not going to go into depth with, like, the way that I read a chart, because everybody does it differently and it doesn't really matter. But sometimes I just feel it and see where I'm drawn, and other times I'll use a rulership system. For you, you've got a really interesting conglomeration of energy in your chart, where basically your planets are all lined up in one area.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's called a stellium when there's a group of three or more planets in one area,
mm-hmm.
especially in one sign. So I notice that I talked about before how there's the chart is divided into four major sections and then 12 mm-hmm. as an even deeper division. But your stuff is all located in one of those four areas, and that is the upper right quadrant. If you're looking at the chart, it's houses 7, 8, and 9. And this is the part of a chart that represents dealing with others.
Mm-hmm.
So when I look at a chart like this, I could make a guess that in your life this time, it's really about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And relationships are of primary importance to mm-hmm. everything that goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And so much comes into play with that. So first of all, it's just a validation, like you're here to do work with relationship. But also it can point to a lack of balance around that too. And so one of the big medicine pieces that comes in right off the bat is, how well do you know yourself?
Yeah. And one thing I was very curious to ask you is that, you know, I have a lot in the seventh house, but I don't have anything in the first house.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
just by looking at that, I would say, you know, the challenge is to get to know myself more.
Yeah.
Because I'm always in the world of other people
mm-hmm.
and considering myself in relationship to another person. You know, so there's always that pairing there, but then, you know, what am I like? What do I need? What do I see? You know, so all of that is very much like, hey, you can really cultivate your own health by returning to self.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to deepen into that a little bit, the first house is the house of self. And the seventh house is the house of the other.
Yes.
The house of marriage, relationships, one-on-one partnering, and open enemies. Because those things tend to devolve into each other.
Right, right. So for me, I work a lot with other people. You know, some people are involved on the technological level with their work, mm-hmm. or maybe they work with animals,
mm-hmm.
but I work with people.
Yeah.
And as a tarot reader, I feel like I almost need all those planets there in that house.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, my mind is always like thinking constantly about other people and, downloading information sometimes that mm-hmm. I'm like, well, no, actually, I don't. I'm not ready for that right now. I'm grocery shopping. Come back later. It's very much my nature to really want to get to know people on a one-on-one level, and like really my relationships, whether they're family relationships, business partnerships, you know, whatever, are very, very important to me. Mm-hmm. I think the most important out of everything. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah, so in a session, I would ask you some questions about yourself. Mm-hmm. I would ask you, what makes you feel most yourself?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess what makes me feel most myself is, midsummer, riding my bike, gardening, getting dirty, going to the river, washing it off, living close to the earth. Reading tarot is a really big part of really like what brings me joy, creating art, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's a bit of a trick. It's a little bit tricky because in a chart like this where we've identified like there's such an emphasis on being with other people that there can be a loss of self that goes on, and there can be a lack of boundaries or a lack of understanding in terms of what your boundaries are and when you don't need to give anymore, because there's a lot in your chart around just giving and giving and giving and giving and helping and healing and serving and giving. And So
social justice is really important to me too. So
yes, absolutely. And there's an emphasis in Libra in your chart, and Libra is very much about justice and balance and harmony in terms of society and in particular. But so there's a trickiness to it because your sense of self as an individual, according to your chart, is always bound up or connected to your sense of being in relationship. Mm-hmm. So actually, when you feel the most yourself, it could be, like you said, when you're doing a tarot reading as a servant, as a channel of healing and help for somebody else. So there's that understanding, and having that understanding leads you to more nuances, I think, of, okay, I need to learn about myself. I need to connect with myself. What does that mean? I guess I need to, like, shut off the world and meditate for a few days so I can really feel my own energy, you know? And my thought around that is it's not that simple.
Yeah.
And it's yes, meditation and alone time would be important in terms of cleansing yourself of other people's energies and coming back to a place of self-awareness and deep listening. Yeah, you would want to take time to retreat. Mm-hmm. But you also would want to be learning about how can I maintain my sense of self even when I'm around others, so that I don't get lost in their story, but that I still feel individuated from them, even as I'm enjoying this container of our exchange.
I usually feel very, very independent, and in a lot of ways, very, very, I feel very independent, but then I also feel like I can make a division between myself and others, but I think that we can always do better, I think, for sure. I know I definitely could do better, because I know that I am still learning how to cleanse that energy, how to ground, you know, all those things. And it's a very airy chart, right?
Yeah, you have a lot of air, you have a lot of water, you've got a little bit of everything, but there is a lot of air, and air is the intellect, it's communication, it's people. Mm-hmm. And there is an independence in your chart that's indicated. You've got Mars square Uranus, and that's just, that's so independent, and it's feisty, and it's rebellious, and it's revolutionary, and it's really good at creating space and distance between yourself and others. So you definitely have that, like, feistiness quality.
Yeah, I would describe myself as kind of a feisty person. I love people, and I'm so caring and so giving. But if you do something that I feel like is unjust or hurts other people or hurts me, then I will stick up for it. Usually, like, to the detriment of other things. Sometimes I'm just like, no, this is wrong. Cannot continue going this way.
Yeah. You just throw it in there. You're like fighting for that in a way.
Yes.
Yes. But deep attachment, just to conclude this portion of what I see in your chart, is like very deep attachment. Like you're not content to just talk about the weather and move on with your day. You are looking for intimacy. You're looking for a real understanding and a raw, real exchange between yourself and others. And that is so beautiful and healing, and it can sometimes lead to, like, you know, codependent qualities.
Right. I think as I have grown up, I think that I have, like, you know, done so much around, you know, being like, okay, this is your side of the street. This is my side of the street. I'm going to go on and I'm going to do what's good for me. And yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I love that. And I hear that a lot from my clients, that like the chart that I look at, like I said, it's the birth chart, you know? So it's this raw potential. And I hear from people that as they age, they are kind of going around that circuit of raw potential over and over and over and over again. And it's like, we might feel sometimes like we never get it. We're always learning the same lesson, but it's usually the same lesson that is in a graduated form. It's the same lesson, but we're in grade 9 now, or grade 10.
Right. And that's how it is with the tarot as well. I mean, a lot of times it goes back to one archetype over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's very fascinating. Okay, so when I initially met with you, we talked a lot about the definition of success. So I mean, I kind of think of success as being, you know, making lemons out of lemonade, or making lemonade out of lemons, you know?
Yeah. I like both ways of
that. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Hey, sometimes I just want the lemon. I don't want that sugar in there.
Yeah. So I think that life path and success is really determined by a person's chart. I mean, I hate to sound fatalistic or anything, but I think it's just one tool to like really understand people. And for me, it's just been completely extraordinarily helpful, you know, and so true. And it's like, okay, you're here to learn about relationship. I have a lot in the eighth house too, right? So it's like metaphysics, the occult, working with other people, you know, that kind of thing, getting to know myself, all those things. So success would be, what would success look like for someone with this chart?
Yeah, I love this question. And what we were talking about when we were discussing this subject before is a lot of people come to me with the question of, what is my purpose? And how can I be successful? I feel like that kind of resides inside that question of, what is my purpose? And what I notice is in this society, in this culture, if you have a thriving business, if you're making a decent amount of money, maybe if you're married with two kids and got all your ducks in a row, then that is this ingrained concept of success.
Right.
For a lot of people, that you're in a stable partnership that looks healthy from the outside with one other person who is the opposite sex. And, you know, there's like, there's these social
mores.
All these
rules.
Yeah, there's these social
rules.
And
I just
mores.
Can't follow rules.
Exactly. So that's our the current culture's underground vision, in a way, of success. And what I see in people's charts is that success is so different for everyone. And for me, like, becoming successful or fulfilling your soul purpose, for one person, it might really look like creating a successful business.
Right.
Say their Saturn is on their midheaven and they're really just supposed to be a corporate boss, a corporate manager. Like, that honestly, exists, you know? And then for other people, maybe they have Saturn in Sagittarius, like I do, and their version of success includes long-distance travel.
Right.
It includes publishing. Maybe they've got Saturn in Cancer. And the reason I'm deferring to Saturn is because Saturn tells the story of our soul purpose and the work that we're here to materially manifest in our lives. There's other things that also tell the story of success in a chart. But say Saturn's in Cancer and you're really supposed to be a mom. You know, or Saturn is in another sign, but it's square your moon. And what that points to, what that can point to is that you're on a journey of discovery around motherhood. I sat with a client recently who had Saturn square moon, and one of her questions to me was if she was going to have children in this lifetime. And like I said, I don't do predictive work.
Right.
But I do tell the story of the chart, which is that Saturn square moon points to the importance of nurturing, the importance of feeling familial connection, of feeling like you're protecting somebody, of feeling like you're creating a safe space, whether it's within yourself or for other people. And it can point to a lack or a limitation, a blockage or a debilitation around being able to access those things as well. So her journey, her question is, am I supposed to be a mother? My answer is, that's a really important thing for you to go after. And that is a measure of your own story of self-success. Like, how secure can you become in yourself? And the more secure and the more nurturing you become inside yourself, the greater the possibility is that you'll be able to overcome the obstacles and the limitations to motherhood. So someone with Saturn square moon might go through potentially like issues around becoming a mother. My mom has a Saturn moon aspect actually, and she had a lot of trouble conceiving. And she's the best mom that could ever exist. Like, literally, like, this woman was born to be a mom, and she mothers everyone, you know? But that's exactly what I'm talking about in terms of purpose, success, and the stories that a chart can tell, where it's not as cut and dry as, yes, you're going to be a mom and that's part of your life path, or no, it's not. It's more of, you're in a process right now of learning what's standing in the way between you having that thing of great importance to you, and you're showing up and doing the work and making the choice to overcome those obstacles so that you can fully materialize that possibility.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. And in your chart, you have Saturn in Libra in the seventh house.
Yes.
So again, that points to the importance of relationships. Your Saturn's also conjunct your Mercury, and the Mercury rules the mind and communications. So you may have had experience in this life where you felt blocked in terms of your self-expression, or you felt like you weren't able to access the right words, or you could have had a lot of judgment against yourself in terms of your speech and the way that your mind works. Sometimes when I see a Saturn-Mercury aspect, those people have a hard time in school. Or sometimes they were born in one country and then moved to another country at a young age and had to learn the language. So there was really a test of their communicative and intellectual capabilities. And like I said, when you face those obstacles and rise to the challenge, it's the whole making lemons out of lemonade thing, and lemonade out of lemons. I love that. It's really both, you know? And sometimes you don't want the sugar, sometimes you do. But yeah, so for you, it's like your purpose has to do with being in relationship. Your version of success is mastering what it means to be in balance and to be in harmonious, compatible relating, and mastering your ability to message, use words, and self-express, and to trust your to trust your perception around what's going on and be able to communicate that. So that's your version of success.
Awesome. Well, that makes me feel good, because that's something that those things are very important to me anyways, and I put a lot of energy into my relationships and being honest and showing up and being accountable and all those different kinds of things.
Yeah.
And it's totally me.
Yeah, you're doing it.
Yeah,
and with Mars in the sixth too, I could see you implementing creative technologies around relationships.
So what would that be like?
Well, you would have to tell me, because you're the expert on that.
Different technologies for a relationship.
So, for example, like if you're exploring a relationship model that's really different from the cultural norm, then typically there aren't always structures or technologies in place to make that run efficiently and effectively. But by your chart, it looks like you're willing to figure out how to do that, and you're here to sort of lay out a groundwork to help people
a new structure, a new structure of relating, a new structure of creating tribal justice, like what happens when you know, there's a disagreement between two people that gets violent.
Like,
you know, is calling the police always an option, you know, that kind of thing.
Like,
definitely important to me. So thank you so much for looking at my chart and telling me all sorts of amazing stuff.
You're welcome.
A lot to, you know, really sit on and digest. So before we end the show, can you tell us how to find you?
Yeah, definitely. My current website is heavenlybodieshealing.com. I'm getting ready to launch a new website soon, but there'll be a redirect, so I'm not going to mention that URL yet, because it's not
It's a secret.
Yes. So you can find me through my website, heavenlybodieshealing.com. I am based here in Asheville as my home and my root, but I
And your name is Virginia Rosenberg.
And my name is Virginia Rosenberg, yes. Yes, it is. And I'm based here in Asheville as my root, but I, like I said, I work internationally and I have a lot of travel coming up, but no matter where I am, I do in-person sessions. They can be one-on-one, they can be couple sessions, I do family sessions, but I also do phone, Skype, and FaceTime sessions as well. But while I'm here in Asheville, I also teach weekly classes on Sundays. I've got a Qigong class on Sunday morning, 9:30 to 10:30 at Om Sanctuary. I have a yoga Qigong blend class that I've been teaching at West Asheville Yoga for over 3 years, and that's from 2 to 3:30 on Sundays. And I have a Koya class on Monday nights right now from 7 to 9 p.m. at Nourishing Life, and that runs until November 2nd. And then I'll be taking a break to do some preparations for upcoming travels.
Very cool.
Yes.
That's awesome. And I think I met you once when you were reading at Dobra.
Yes. Yeah, I do readings there. I have a slot from 2 to 6 p.m. on Tuesdays at West Asheville Dobra. And I have a slot from 12 to 5 p.m. on Thursdays at Downtown Dobra. And you're welcome to drop in, or you can contact me through my website and schedule an appointment. And my rate there is discounted. It's just $40 for a 30-minute session. I also do 45-minute sessions, hour-long sessions.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. You have been listening to Spirituality and Stuff, and I am your host, Summer Zachary. You can find us every Sunday, 8 to 9 p.m. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.